Blog Talk Radio.
Let's see your friends and welcome to the World Transform. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. Fired up about tonight's show. I mean, Monday's show was so awesome, Phil. I have to, you know, every now and then I've got to toot our horn, right? If you haven't heard Monday's, go back. It was fun. We had a great time.
I'm going to say that Monday's show should have been a Wednesday show. It was amazing.
Because it was amazing, yeah.
It had the amazing, and of course Wednesday is always our it's our day when we have to take it up a notch, and I think we're going to deliver. I think we've got more of the same and some pretty astounding stuff here tonight. So I recommend everybody you want to be tuning in this week. You don't want to miss these shows because we're having some fun and we're just all over the map. Cosmology, bioscience, astronomy, physics, technology, you name it, we're talking about it this week. And our show tonight is The Public Library, Books, Music, and Replacement Limbs to Go. And, of course, this starts with this story. A five-year-old girl needed a prosthetic hand, so a public library used its 3D printer. What a fantastic story. Follow the link, read the story. The summary is in the title. That's exactly what happened. A group of people actually, though, came together to help make it, you know, it's not quite as simple as you show up at the library and say, well, I need a hand to fit this child, and they go, okay, give me 10 minutes, and, you know, they print one out for you at the library. There's more to the story than that. It took a kind of a community effort of makers to really help pull this off, but wow, you know, who saw this coming for the public library, right? Stephen, a while back, when we were talking about in the future everything will be a coffee shop, I believe the public library was one of the
coffee shops, right? I was talking about, and part of what I was talking about was the use of 3D printing. You know, if 3D printers get to the point that they can produce practically anything quickly, then what's the point of going to Walmart, right? I mean, you either 3D print something in your home, or if your own 3D printer is not up to the task of printing whatever it is that you want, you roll down to the local coffee shop where they print it out, right?
Exactly.
I was reminded.
They got a bigger model there. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, they got a bigger model that can do more intricate whatever and print out what you need. And so that's kind of part of the coffee shop idea that I was talking about in that article. But, I was also reminded of you remember Robert Downey Jr. helping to introduce a young kid to his prosthetic arm.
Right.
It was made to look
which
like an Iron
Man. The maker had produced for him, mm-hmm. Right?
That's right. It was a 3D printed prosthetic hand that was made to look like Iron Man. And Robert Downey Jr. Brought it in and, you know, pulled it out of a case. He was very much in character as Tony Stark, right?
Right.
And pulls it out of the thing and says, "Okay, let's do some testing with this, you know." What do you think? You know, talking with the kid like it was an Iron Man project, right?
Yeah.
And it was that was heartwarming. Particularly with a young child, getting them to actually use the prosthetic, accepting it, is a huge thing to overcome. And by doing what he did, Robert Downey Jr. was a big part of that, I think. And but you know, I found it equally interesting that you could 3D print it, and you know, and I think that's, you know, that's things that have to be customized, because every amputation is a little bit different, right? So you have to customize these things for that person. And that makes 3D printing very much the go-to technology now for that. And so, yeah, why not use the library? I think that's awesome.
I think it is, too. And we've heard these stories about hobbyists making their own dental work, making their own prosthetic limbs. There's been a lot of that going on. This one in particular is interesting because of the library aspect. And I published this. I mean, I've relinked this up on Facebook, and my sister, who is the head of a library, a public library in Kansas City area, she commented, she said, yeah, you know what, we had the same thing happen with ours, which to me, I read that and I go, oh, of course, the great thing about libraries is they're this wonderful community of, you know, kind of sharing best practices with each other. So this is not an isolated incident, right? You read the headline, you go, well, one story gets picked up. This is going to be a happening thing now. And it's not just limbs. Other things that people need, we'll see that happening because libraries share information. And I guess, as we were talking about, I guess a few months ago, just as schools all have them now, libraries all have them now too. 3D printers are becoming ubiquitous in these kinds of settings, and this is going to be one of the ways that 3D printing becomes part of our reality. It becomes an everyday part of reality. It's like, well, mine's not very good. You know, a kid's doing a project, maybe the one at school, and maybe the one at the library, or you know, if push comes to shove, you have to go someplace where you pay a little bit to use a really good one, right? That might be the ultimate premium 3D printer, but. It's interesting to see how this happens, you know, kind of in the background. And it's a reminder that whenever we talk about any of these interesting developments happening, that there's a lot more going on behind the scenes elsewhere in the world that we don't know about leading up to it or in the aftermath of it.
I read another story along the same lines, Phil, but this was a father in his own home, with a child who had an amputation, and you know, bought a MakerBot, a really good 3D printer, the best he could get, and has gone through many prototypes to get the right one for his child. And apparently now the child is becoming involved in designing further updates and things to her own prosthetics. So. And I could see this happening in public libraries and in the home and everywhere else. But 3D printing is it's almost on the Rodney Dangerfield of a futuristic technology. Sometimes it doesn't get the respect yet that it deserves. But like you say, it's behind the scenes. It's becoming more and more important to us.
Yeah, I think so. It's where homebrew computing was in the 70s, it's something going on in people's garages and in their basements and there's clubs. And it's this world transforming technology emerging around us and being seen mostly as kind of an interesting little hobby. But its capacity to change what we know as how things work is astounding, and we're going to see a lot more.
Like AI, 3D printing, I think, suffered a little from overhype at the beginning.
But
it's beginning to deliver on some of that early hype now. It's just taking a little longer than a lot of people would have hoped for. But, hey, we're still getting it. So
we're getting the benefit. That's the main thing. Okay, how about this? The mathematics of history. What can mathematics say about history? According to TED fellow Jean-Baptiste Michel, quite a lot. And basically, he's outlining something not too unlike Harry Seldon's psychohistory from the Asimov's Foundation series, which, folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google Isaac Asimov. Actually, go to Amazon and just buy the Foundation trilogy and read that.
That's right.
Come back and we'll talk. I don't have
that is some good golden age sci-fi there.
Absolutely. So one of the classics. So in that series, you know, using computers, there is a whole mechanism for understanding history before it happens via mathematics. And what this fellow Jean-Baptiste Michel is saying is that basically we can do that now. You know, we're getting smarter at looking at patterns through history, we're getting better and better at projecting things as they come. And I have to tell you that in an election season, this reminds me of all the polling data we see. You see these projections of how the presidential election is going to come out, and it's, you know, based on this sample and, you know, based on this likelihood of who's going to vote, and, you know, all these different factors get taken into consideration. But the one factor that you can't take into consideration when you do a poll is how will the results of this poll impact how people are going to, you know what I mean? How are people going to react to that poll? And then how will that change what's going to happen come election day, or actually the next poll and then the next poll and the next poll until you get to election day? And that I think is the one kind of hidden, you know, secret ingredient or secret, I don't know, little trap lying within the model that he's describing here, is if mathematics can predict the future, it predicts the future that where we didn't know that these trends would necessarily lead to these things, right? As soon as we understand it, right, as soon as you have this psychohistory capability, it becomes less effective, right? Or am I
well, I don't know. It might become more effective in the sense of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean, to the extent, let's use the case of the election. Let's say that the numbers show that a particular candidate is, you know, very likely to win.
Right.
So those who who see that and believe it, say, well, you know what, I was going to vote for the other person, but you know, I might as well.
I get major self-esteem by voting for the winner. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they just stay home.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they, what's the point of me bothering to get out? You know, this thing's already lost. Right. So, it could actually become a self.
You're right. It could reinforce.
It
could be this opportunity to change the pattern, or it could be this, you know, the authorities come out, you know, the experts come out and say, well, here's what's going to happen. Look,
yeah,
that's what the numbers saying.
Let's just go ahead and plan for that, though. And
that's the future that we got to build our plans around. You're right. It probably will be as much a reinforcing thing as it is a opportunity to go against it. So that's probably a wash, actually, come to think of it.
Yeah, I think that large trends. I mean, we can just read the news and sometimes pick out large trends. That's basically what we've been doing with this program from the beginning, right? Is try to find the trends of where things are going. But if you can do it with some mathematical rigor and put a certain degree of certainty on things and maybe give even a time frame for when things will happen, you can plan for it better. And maybe that's a good thing. So.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, we've always talked in terms of, the big trends around accelerating change, around Moore's Law, the things that we call the human imperative, you know, also gets called the law of accelerating change and goes by other names. These kind of predictable drivers. I mean, Ray Kurzweil, his whole shtick, right? I mean, his whole career is based on being able to make some reasonable, predictions about where technology is going to lead next, and where that's going to push society. So yeah, I think this becomes a more detailed, maybe more rigorous way of doing the same thing, and pretty interesting stuff. I'll be interested to see what level of detail they can tell us about the future going forward as this sort of thing. This sort of thing progresses, and you know, I hope it's good stuff for sure.
Very good.
All right, how about this? Fatigue, it's all in your head, Stephen. New research shows that perceptions of fatigue and pain stop us from hitting our physical limits long before our bodies do. Can athletes train their brains to reach unheard of levels of peak performance? This is really interesting. And I've observed this too. You know, what is your actual physical limitation on performing a certain task, say an athletic task? Well, where you go, well, that's it, I'm done, I can't do it anymore. But according to this, in saying that, it's not your body. We know this anecdotally, we know this through, you know, people in survival situations who do unbelievable things, right? Keep going for periods of time that no Olympic athlete can keep going, right? You know, lift heavy objects or, you know, climb places or just keep moving in ways that that we would think would be almost impossible. But the point is, the physiological limitations on what the body can do, the actual failure point for the body is often well beyond where the brain says, that's it, you're done, right?
Right.
And the question is, ooh, can we get past that? The brain says, you're done. Now, there's definitely risk around that, and we've seen that in the CrossFit movement and some of these other kind of extreme fitness movements where people do try to move past what their brain is telling them their limitation is. Turns out, you know, there's a real good reason why your brain would tell you to knock it off, right? And that is to avoid injury, right?
That's right. There's a point at which you can continue to go, but by doing so, you put yourself at some risk. And
exactly.
But you know, you only live once too, Phil. And
that's true.
And you know, you can live a mediocre life, or you can, you know, live a heroic life. You know, why not occasionally at least push yourself to the absolute limit? And there's a movie called Facing the Giants. I posted a clip from that movie, Facing the Giants, on Facebook maybe just a week or so ago. That's exactly on point with this. Young man, they're up against a tough team. It's a football movie, okay? And they're up against a tough team the following Friday, and he makes some sort of negative comment. And the coach says, "Have you already written off this coming Friday? I mean, is a loss?" And he says, "Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this drill again, and this drill involved walking a bear crawl type deal where you don't have your knees or anything. You just hands and feet on the ground, but with a player on your back. Okay, bear crawl is tough enough, right? But but these guys were doing it with a player on their back to increase their strength." And he says, "How far do you think you can go if you give me your very best?" He says, "Maybe to the 30-yard line." And you know, they're starting in one end zone. And he says, "Well, I want you to promise to give me your very best until you reach absolute failure." And then he says, "And we're going to do a blindfold." And he puts a blindfold over the athlete, right? And and so he, you know, he starts, you know, and he's got this this player on his back, and they start out in this bear crawl, and he starts going, at one point he kind of stops, and he says, "I'm not quitting, I'm just, you know," and he said, come on, keep going." And at some point, a little further into it, the kids, you know, says, he's given out basically, and his coach says,
right,
"You promise, give me your best. And he kept going, and the kid's going, "I'm out of strength." He says, "Negotiate with your body to get more strength. You got more." And so he keeps going and keeps going, and then just completely reaches failure and falls out. And the coach says, "Take off your blindfold. You're in the end zone. You didn't give me 30 yards. You gave me the entire field, and you did it with a 140-pound athlete on your back." And the kids next to him says, "Coach, I weigh 160. So, you know, it was very, very inspirational. Moved me to tears. It's the sort of thing, Field of Dreams, guys, that you cry in Field of Dreams, you're going to cry when you see this too. Because it's, you know, it's this kid finding within him something a whole lot more than he thought he had. And it's exactly on point. And it's, and you know, so we have anecdotal evidence of it. And I believe it completely. You have reserves that you don't know you have, and it's good to have them, and it's good to be able to access it when you need to. So,
I like that. You know, that's the implications of that are exactly that. That you know, there's this huge untapped potential of your life, that maybe you can do more with.
I love how the coach said negotiate with your body.
Negotiate with your body. That's right. Exactly right. And that's not the only physical limitation we come up against, right? So it's not just what our bodies can do. It's what we think the world is going to be able to, you know, not to get too new agey with this, but that it really is kind of profound. I got to see that movie. Thanks for mentioning that, Stephen. That's awesome.
Yep.
All right, let's move on. We got part nanotech, part living cells. Scientists build a first ever artificial kidney. We talked about this briefly on Monday in the context of talking about spinach being able to produce electricity and hydrogen, and the parallel efforts to develop an artificial leaf. And I raised the question, well, what really is a leaf, right? You know, what is a living leaf? And now we've got the similar question: what exactly is a kidney? When you come right down to it, you know, is a kidney an organ in the body that has a certain shape, is made of a certain set of cells, and performs a particular function, or is a kidney anything that you can put in the body that would perform that exact same function, or anything external to a body, right? Is a dialysis machine a kidney? Because when you look at this, you know, this thing is machinery and living tissue combined in a completely new way to perform a task that we know exactly what the task is, right? I mean, it performs the job of a kidney, and in many ways better than an actual kidney, in some ways not as well as an actual kidney. But, you know, the point is, it's a kidney.
The point is,
and
no,
I mean,
dialysis,
you know, doctor,
for this patient, right?
That's the right. The patient doesn't have to go undergo a dialysis because the function can now take place inside their body. So I'd say that's a kidney. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I think the intersection of biology and nanotech is going to be huge. I mean, that's where so much of our advancements in medical technology, but not just medical technology. You know, I mean, you got people like Craig Venter out there wanting to revolutionize the energy industry with basically biofuel, right? Creating fuel from algae and things like that. So, the intersection of nanotech and biology is going to be just world-changing, and I can't wait to see how a lot of these things work out. And in organs and in many other ways too. So the artificial leaf, let's go ahead and kind of place bets on this, Phil. I'm saying that the artificial leaf is at least 20% not artificial when we finally get it. You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
Do you think?
The artificial leaf will be to some extent a biological leaf. Yeah. And
right.
then
just does
the,
what we
to the point where
do.
People will be asking the same question: well, is it really a leaf or not? I, you know, it's kind of a leaf. Well, kind of like this. You know, it's kind of a kidney. Functionally, it's definitely a kidney, right? The artificial leaf functionally will definitely be a leaf. But it's this really interesting merging of, you know, technology with biology, as you said, that produces these interesting potential outcomes, and we're just at the very beginning of this. I should add that people will be growing their own kidneys before too long. So the question will be, will a quasi-mechanical, quasi-biological kidney be the winner when people need a new kidney, or will just growing a brand new one be the winner? There's always going to be a certain preference for the biological component, but if this thing works better, people might decide to go that way instead. We're going to see not only this interesting unfolding of biological and electronic devices, we're going to see an interesting competition between replacement parts, whether the original equipment, a new copy of the original equipment is going to be better, or whether an enhanced, a piece of machinery that's partially biological will be better.
The old conversation we keep having, which do we get first, Luke Skywalker's mechanical hand or the ability to regrow a hand? We'll see. This will be fun to watch.
Absolutely. So stay tuned. And wow, that takes us to, are we to our last topic already? We almost have enough time to talk about this. I was thinking all this week the one common theme would be there'd be one big cosmological issue at the end that we would give short shrift to. But this is a fun one. Theory suggests that our galaxy could be one big universal travel tunnel. And, you know, I loved the headline, and I love the idea that our basically our whole galaxy is a wormhole, or, you know, contains a wormhole that that could then be navigated in the same way that the wormholes in, say, you know, Star Trek Deep Space Nine or Stargate are. One thing I don't pick up on from reading this article is where exactly is it, right? How would you get into this wormhole, right?
Maybe you need something like a Stargate to access and basically dial into what parts of the wormhole you want to come out at, right? I don't know. The article doesn't give us enough to hear, but, you know, leave us wanting more. They did it.
Well, what they do say is that dark matter somehow acts as the Stargate, but it gets kind of mumbo jumbo at that point. You know, that's the problem. It's like, hey, you know what? The whole galaxy is a wormhole. Now all you need is a Stargate, right? So just get the
right.
Stargate. And I'm sure I've referenced this before. It's the old Steve Martin. You can be a millionaire and never pay income tax, right? First. Get $1 million, right? It's like, okay. You know, step one.
Don't mile.
It's like, hey, the galaxy is a wormhole that we can use to travel anywhere in the universe. Awesome. How do we do it? Well, first you build a Stargate. It's like, well, we don't even know what that is, right?
There's some intermediate steps, you know, that we need to kind of figure out. But hey, it's a cool idea. I hope there's something to that. That would be pretty great.
Well, I hope there is too, because typically you think of a wormhole as being, you know, it's out there somewhere, right? It's a naked singularity from a black hole, and you would typically think of the wormhole as being somewhere way out in space, and even just getting to it is this kind of interstellar voyage is required, right? In the movie Interstellar, they had to cheat by bringing a wormhole into our solar system so that people could reasonably access that, and then, of course, once they had the wormhole, they could go anywhere in the universe. If the wormhole is all around us, that's pretty cool. That suggests that you know, that faster than light travel, that travel beyond our solar system into interstellar space may one day be possible. But it feels to me like it's a little bit of a cheat if you say, but first you need this magic technology that lets you access it. I feel like you know. I'm encouraged, but I feel like we've got a ways to go on this one, don't we?
I'm gonna agree with you, the ways to go, but hey, any sufficiently advanced technology, Phil, this feels like magic, right? So
there you go. Okay, so bring it on.
Could happen. Let's not completely rule it out.
Amaze me with the magic. Well, that's going to do it for our amazing Wednesday show. We're going to be back on Friday with still more fun futuristic topics and some fun other geeks. So I hope you'll all be with us then. Stephen, great talking with you. Thank you all for being with us. And until next time, live to see it.